This podcast is supported by Trust and Will, an online estate planning service. Visit trustandwill.com for details.
If you're thinking about what you'll leave behind, Trust and Will can make sure your values live on.
For me, it's beyond money. It's about responsibility. When I pass on, I want my children and grandchildren to be provided for, of course, but I also want their spiritual futures protected. Trust and Will made it easy to make sure that any decision I had to make, in sickness or in death, would reflect the values that I've upheld all my life. And you know what? Trust and Will gave me the peace of mind that my legacy would be more about purpose than possessions.
Protect your legacy and your loved ones today, tomorrow, and beyond with Trust and Will. Get 20% off when you visit trustandwill.com/support. That's trustandwill.com/support to get 20% off. trustandwill.com/support.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
I want you to get together.
Hello, everyone. Got a bit of a random rumination for you guys again. Though I suppose this one's more of just a personal reminiscing of my own journey to becoming what you call a truther, for whatever meaning these labels and names have anymore in this day and age. But I've been feeling a bit retrospective. And for some reason, you maniacs seem to enjoy listening to me talk for hours on end about my own experiences, so I've got some more stuff to share with you. But I feel like this conversation really is like a long Tips for Truthers edition, though I probably won't label it that because it's just too long. But I've been remembering things from years ago, like 10 years ago, you know. 2011, 2012, 2013 period, where I was kind of falling into all this stuff for the first time and trying to tell the people I was living with at that time at university about this stuff I was finding and kind of the battles I had and the struggles I had along the way. Just trying to convince people about this conspiracy that's out there and the Illuminati, you know, and the symbols and all the media and the predictive programming and the New World Order agenda and all the rest of it, you know. I remember I'm having these flashback memories from my hazy, always being high days, you know, of attempting to tell people and kind of the experiences that I had doing that. I feel like I may have suppressed them for a while because they were just too traumatic's a bit extreme, but they were something I thought I'd rather forget, you know, and move on from. Because at the time, I was only maybe 22, 23 or something, whatever age I was when I started university. I actually forget now, to be honest. I'm 33 now. So yeah, I would have been very early 20s when I realized this stuff. And the end of the world 2012 Mayan calendar thing sucked me in, you know, and people who've been following me for years have heard that story. But I feel like I never really flesh out what happened in those early years, like the minutiae conversations I had day to day with people while trying to contend with all of this. I kind of always summarize it in these podcast visits because there's just no time. There's no time to say it all, you know. But maybe I've got the time now. And I was remembering, I was kind of in a struggle at the time because I was trying to make it as a brand new artist. And prior to kind of waking up, I was making a lot of New Age type artwork, focusing on things like sacred geometry, you know, and platonic solids and the flower of life stuff. And I was very much in that Eastern mysticism type of mindset then. Obviously, I'm a born-again Christian since 2014, and I wouldn't be doing that now. But at the time, that's who I was, and that's what I was doing. And that's my art. That was my artwork, you know. And I was making a lot of artwork about this. And this is how you hear about the end-of-the-world stuff. And you, when you're kind of in the New Age thought bubble online at that time, you inevitably discover things about consciousness shifting, you know, and pole shifts. And the Mayans were talking of a time where there'd be a huge change coming, a reset in some way. And it was actually an awakening moment, and the third eye was going to be opening collectively, and all these thoughts were around, you know. And my bullshit radar was going off a lot during that time, so I was like, nah, that doesn't quite sound right. I was intrigued anyway to kind of see what else is out there, which is when I started digging a little bit below the surface and discovering about the New World Order agenda, you know, and these elite secret societies that kind of have this long plan for generations, to basically turn everybody into a slave class and depopulate the earth a ridiculous amount. And, you know, falling into all that stuff, my artwork became about it. So I had to kind of shift from the New Age stuff to kind of saying, this is more important. This is way more important. This should be my subject matter. This is what I should be making artwork about. So I did. I actually started making like little things here and there along this theme, trying to express these things I was discovering and what I was watching in a way that was communicative to people. So I had to basically make a lot of stuff about it and present it to my teachers, because they were grading me. I was getting a degree at this point, and my subject matter was now conspiracy theories, you know. So I had to kind of show the world. I couldn't hide it. This is exactly what I believe, and this is why, and this is what my artwork's about, and why my artwork is about this, and why I think it's important, you know. So I remember doing presentations in front of my whole class, my whole year, we'll call it, you know. These 40 to 50 each year, it was less and less as people dropped away, you know. But by the second year, when I was really into this full swing, you know, it was maybe about 40 to 30 people in that class by that point. It was only about 20 of us by the end of it. But I was there in this thing called the Tithe Barn in Lincoln, where I was studying at the time. And it's right next to this huge cathedral. And it's like a very small lecture hall. That's what they converted it into. And I remember I'm there at the front of this lecture hall with this huge PowerPoint presentation showing all the symbols in mainstream media that are the same, that all link to Babylonian, Egyptian, esoteric occult symbolism, you know. And I'm showing the eye here, the pyramid there, the winged disc over there, the sun symbol over here, you know. I'm just kind of showing it's everywhere, it's in everything, and it has been for a long time. And this is showing a coordination attempt throughout modern artwork, through mainstream media, to symbolize or at least show their allegiances at the very least, and deceive and manipulate and corrupt people at its worst, you know. And I'm there doing this massive presentation, laying out my case, just like I'm doing in one of these videos, you know, like I have done in these videos for years. I suppose that was my first test run of being somebody who's trying to communicate this to a large audience. But this was live, and I mean live. I had a real audience in front of me, sat there staring at me, you know. And I think that was the first time I experienced that look, from that glazed over look from people who were looking at you kind of concerned, like, what is this guy doing, you know? But I made a good, solid argument to show pattern. It's clearly there. It's obviously there. And there's reasons for this, historically speaking, and going into the history of secret societies as well, and kind of saying that's why these symbols belong to them. These are their symbols. This is, and they are showing they own all these things. And it was kind of an open-ended conclusion. It's like, well, what does this all mean? Well, clearly we need to get together and figure it out, you know. And that was kind of, that's when the channel, I suppose, was born, through that first presentation. And it was a turning point for me and my group, shall we say, my year of study. A lot of people never talked to me again after that. A few stuck by me because they thought I was interesting, you know, but I think they kept me around as a novelty more so than a legitimate person they'd like to spend an afternoon with or have a coffee with, you know what I mean? But when it came to university, when we were in our studio, they'd still talk to me, yeah, but that's as far as it went. And I just stuck to myself then, and I got on with it, and I made the channel, you know, and I made my dissertation on occult symbolism in 21st century artwork and in mainstream media. And I made my case, a 10,000 word case, you know, for and it's terrible. It's not a very good, well-written thesis. I don't mean the information's not good. I mean, I wrote it last minute really fast. So it's riddled with error, like spelling errors and technical errors, not information errors necessarily. So it's a poor read, but I managed to get a 2-1. At the end of it all, which is just the grade below the top grade, you know, which is a first in your degree, your first class. So I got a 2-1, which is a good pass, you know. I think a pass is a 2-2 anyway. So I did okay, you know, as a result of that. But I could have done a lot better. But at that time, I was also struggling with a lot of personal things. Drug addiction, finding myself, meaning, purpose. And I kind of, the degree kind of was just like full.
This podcast is supported by Trust and Will, an online estate planning service. Visit trustandwill.com for details.
If you're thinking about what you'll leave behind, Trust and Will can make sure your values live on.
For me, it's beyond money. It's about responsibility. When I pass on, I want my children and grandchildren to be provided for, of course. But I also want their spiritual futures protected. Trust and Will made it easy to make sure that any decision I had to make in sickness or in death would reflect the values that I've upheld all my life. And you know what? Trust and Will gave me the peace of mind that my legacy would be more about purpose than possessions.
Protect your legacy and your loved ones today, tomorrow, and beyond with Trust and Will. Get 20% off when you visit trustandwill.com/support. That's trustandwill.com/support to get 20% off. trustandwill.com/support.
Going to the wayside, and I was never in university. I was never in class, you know. I was busy just out there getting involved, and I started like meeting up with local like activist groups for chemtrails and things like this, and I made artwork filming them and talking to them and getting their point of view, and that's when I was formulating this thesis about understanding conspiracy, and it's kind of that's when I came up with the phrase, this is the right information, but it seems to always be in the wrong hands, as in the people who are the public fronts of this information, who are trying to get it to the masses. No one can take them seriously because they literally look and sound absolutely batshit insane. It's kind of like, this is not going to work. I could see clearly, like, this is not going to work. Like, they're right, but no one's going to believe they're right because just simply the way they behave and act and look, it's just not going to appeal to the broader audience we need to convince, unfortunately. And it was a harsh, horrible truth even for me to accept, because I'm the type of person who would listen to anybody, no matter how they speak, whether it's slow or grating to some, or how they look. I don't care about that kind of thing. It's like, what's your information? What do you have to tell me, you know? And I'll listen. But I remember, you know, doing my presentation in front of a live audience, you know, I am who I am, and I think I did it as sound and as much as Paul Stobbs would do such a thing to the audience. You know, try to be as convincing as possible and as likable and lighthearted as possible while I'm at it. You know, I try to NLP the hell out of it, you know, and get them to focus and take it in and not scoff at the idea. And I lost about 90 to 80% of them still. So it's a very hard sell. You know, it really is. And it's kind of like, how are we supposed to do this? I mean, if me trying to phrase it in like an artistic art lecture style doesn't convince people, you know, and try and keep as grounded as possible with references and resources to back it up without getting too extravagant, or and that still doesn't convince people, how are these people supposed to do it? I realized, like, I made that connection. I was like, this is not going to work. Like, this is just not going to work. Like, the people out there trying to convince everybody of chemtrails look like unwashed, smelly hippie types who were just... You just can't take him seriously, you know what I mean? I'm not trying to denigrate my audience here. I love you all, I really do. And like the fight they put out there, the putting in the effort, you know, I respect the fight. But it was a losing battle every time. I could see the look in people's faces when they were like handing out their leaflets and going around with their signs, and it was just not working. I could see it was not working. So this is, again, when the channel was being formulated, like, I need a platform. There needs to be more voices out there that actually are legitimately trying to legitimize the information. Like, present it in a way that these people need it to be presented in order to feel comfortable and safe sharing it with others. Because there's another thing as well. Like, I think a lot of people may believe what they're being told by these people. Wherever they get their information from, like these crazy, wacky, sensational videos online by extreme characters, or in the streets by the activist types who are really over the top and aggressive about it. But they're scared to admit they believe it because they don't want to be associated with such people or such presentations, because it seems so low quality and detached from what people expect as a standard, you know. And I wanted to make that content that people could use as a respected standard to share with others and feel comfortable knowing, well, the person, at least the person they're listening to, doesn't look or sound crazy, you know. And that was the basic ethos of the channel when I first started it. But I myself, as a presenter, was like, I'm not even sure I can take on that kind of, I really don't know if I can. I have an idea, I know what I want, but can I actually do that? You know, I was only young. Well, I was like in my early 20s. I'm figuring out, like, can I actually even do this, and at what cost is this going to be to me, you know, in some way? Like, because this is my reputation on the line, but as an artist, and knowing that I am a creative and I want to actually make a difference in the world, I'm just gonna have to do it. I'm gonna have to try and see what happens. And you know, I had nothing. I had no subscribers then, and it was just at the end of my university project I had this channel. And my end of year show was me at a desk with Understanding Conspiracy behind me. And I had a stack full of paper in front of me. And on that stack was just a list of topics in the conspiracy world. Must have been 200 topics on that list. I'm annoyed I don't have it anymore, because the laptop it was saved on got stolen. So I'm really upset that I don't have that list anymore. It would have been a really great reference point if I have to use now. I bet the stuff on there even I've memory hold, you know. But there was a long list of conspiracy topics on there. And it was basically, pick one. Anybody who sat down in front of me can just pick something off the list and I'll explain it to them. And that's what I did for like 3 hours, all night. I had people sitting there, and they had that laugh on their face, that smug look, like, hey, look at this guy, what's he on about, you know, all right, then, what's all this about, then, you know, what's the, tell us about the moon landing hoax, then, you know, basic stuff. But then there was some proper dark stuff on there as well, you know, really dark stuff, and it was a wild night, because it was me testing myself more than anything, like, can I convince people that this is real? By presenting it in a cool manner. So, you know, I had a shirt on, looked presentable, haircut, everything, you know, just sat there, and I was like, yeah, you know, this is exactly what this is about. So I said, so this particular topic, X, Y, and Z is what they believe, and this is why they believe it, and this is the evidence we have to back it up, and it's usually connected to this and this and this topic as well. And I kind of just laid it out, like, you want to understand that conspiracy? Yeah, let me explain it to you. I think a few people left the table, you know, thoroughly convinced to at least, or at least curious, like, that. At least I think I piqued their curiosity. Some people were just not having it. They were just like, yeah, whatever, mate, you know, you're just crazy, whatever, you know, good show, yeah, it's fun to talk, but this is all absolute nonsense. And they were just having a laugh with the mates, you know, they weren't taking any of it seriously. But some people, like, sat down and were like, all right, then, explain this. And I was like, sure, let me try my best, you know. And I tried to come out with that humble, like, I don't know everything, but this is what you can find. This is the information we have. And I think that detached approach worked. I realized that that really helps a lot. If you present the information from a, this is not my hill to die on, but this is what I've heard and this is what people say is going on. When you present it from that detached viewpoint, I found that was a really good technique, because it's kind of, you're both in it together then when you're having that conversation with them, saying, figuring it out together and questioning it together. You're kind of making a participatory, is that the word, like experience, where you're saying to this person, look, I'm not even sure if this is true, but this is what I've heard, this is what I've found, this is what we do know. What do you think? You know, and they're like, well, I'm not sure about this, but that's interesting here. And it's kind of like, yeah, no, I've heard that, blah, 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 blah. You know, and it kind of creates this back and forth. And that's when I also learned, okay, so it really is true. People don't care about the information necessarily. It really is a heavy amount about the person selling the information. And I say selling seriously. They're buying into it, because that's how they're programmed to function in this world, it seems. People have to buy into something to believe it. They have to invest to make something a part of their worldview. And you have to convince them to invest. So it's not like the product itself, let's say the truth is a product. It's not good enough that it's simply true. That's just not how it works. Truth isn't convenient. So you need to try and sell to somebody why knowing this incredibly inconvenient truth is worth it. And you can only do that through example. I found it's kind of like, well, this person telling me this information seems to have his shit together. Maybe it's not too bad knowing this stuff. Maybe I do need to look into this a bit more. Maybe it would be better for me to not stick my head in the ground and ignore it, you know. That's kind of what I realized. It does work, sadly. Like, I'm not happy about that result.
This podcast is supported by Trust and Will, an online estate planning service. Visit trustandwill.com for details.
If you're thinking about what you'll leave behind, Trust and Will can make sure your values live on.
For me, it's beyond money. It's about responsibility. When I pass on, I want my children and grandchildren to be provided for, of course, but I also want their spiritual futures protected. Trust and Will made it easy to make sure that any decision I had to make in sickness or in death would reflect the values that I've upheld all my life. And you know what? Trust and Will gave me the peace of mind that my legacy would be more about purpose than possessions.
Protect your legacy and your loved ones today, tomorrow, and beyond with Trust and Will. Get 20% off when you visit trustandwill.com/support. That's trustandwill.com/support to get 20% off. trustandwill.com/support.
I don't relish in the fact that people need to be sold the truth through charismatic character rather than just the virtue of truth itself. I really don't like that. Like, that's not good. And this is just conspiracy topics I'm talking about here. I'm not talking about the truth, the way in the life, which is Jesus Christ. All you need to do is tell people the gospel, and that works. You know, that's sufficient, absolutely, because that truth stands on its own, and it speaks to the soul of a man. The Holy Spirit is a loud voice when you preach the truth, the way in the life. You know, and you preach the gospel to people. That cuts straight through the bullshit. But when you try to convince people of things like secret societies and these earthly issues and what's going on around, that takes a bit more. It takes a lot more, like, because it's a very worldly, earthly problem, and people haven't got time for that unless it directly affects them. And a lot of people don't know it directly affects them. So you've got to try and tell them it does and how to get them to see, oh, this does affect me and this is important to me. That's a long process. And I find rapport building seems to be the first step. Like, you need to make them like you first before they'll listen to what you have to say. And that's, again, I don't like that. It's horrible. I personally don't work like that. I'll hear people out whether I like their character or not. I don't care about that. I want to know the information, you know. And I think a good portion of real, serious truth seekers out there are like that, you know. But the majority aren't. The majority of people are not like that. They're not. So, you know, I did have many conversations, not just in these formal settings for my university degree, but with the people I was living with at the time as well. And I was trying to And these are like my closest friends. These are people who know me intimately, who I've lived with for like a few years, you know, and miles away from home altogether in this strange city that we've made a home out of, you know, and I'm living with these people day to day, you know, every day, spending all my time with them. And suddenly I start falling down the conspiracy hole, you know, and they're like, oh, what's happened to Paul? He's acting a bit weird, you know, and I start trying to explain to them what I'm discovering, what my artwork's about now, what I'm writing about, you know, and the relationship dynamic changed massively. Like, massively. And it was my fault as well, because I made a lot of mistakes in these early days as well, which I kind of realized now, which why I have my tips for truthers, like, okay, this is definitely not the way to handle this information or help people or teach people or even just have a conversation with people. It's just bad conversation ethics. You know, like, it's just terrible way of doing things. It's bad practice. And my first flaw was that I spoke too much. And I know the irony of me saying that now, talking into camera for 23 minutes straight, you know. But I'm saying, when you're in these one-on-one settings or in a group setting and, you know, you're just chilling out, having a drink or having a smoke or whatever it is, and you're just you know, talking, I realized I would dominate the conversation. And for like an hour or two, I would have been just talking and talking and talking about all these connections I'm making and all these... and the implications of the wider conspiracy, you know. But I'd been going on for like 2 hours nonstop, and I wouldn't even have taken a breath, you know. And even when there is a pause, I'd very quickly carry on again, because another connection would get made in my brain that I just have to vomit out. And I realized this poor person who was sat next to me, you know, hasn't said a word. It wasn't a conversation. It was me trauma information dumping on them. And I had one friend who would regularly come around to mine, and I'd just do that, you know, this is when I was still smoking weed. And I think that helped. I think the cannabis definitely didn't help me, because you get stuck in these psychedelic thought processes where everything is just kind of reeling, and then you forget everything by the end of it, you know, so you're still trying to process it. You keep doing it over and over again because you feel like these are new revelations each time when you just said the same thing last week, you know. But eventually he distanced himself from me, quietly exited, gone. And that's completely my fault. Absolutely my fault. I came on too strong. I shouldn't have done that. I don't blame him. I do not blame him. And he was a believer, relatively. You know, he believed a lot of things, but the way I was doing it, he wasn't quite as into it as I was, you know, but because I felt like there was this opportunity to get it off my chest with somebody who like understands, I did it wrong. I was selfish about it. So one of my first, you know, one of my main tips of truth is don't do that. Don't be that guy. Just don't be that guy. Nobody likes that guy. But when I was in university, you know, I did do that a lot, and I find myself trying to stop myself and correct myself and listen. Okay, so I've said enough. What's your take on that? What's your response? And a lot of the times, sometimes it was that kind of situation where I'd make a comment about something that was happening and everybody just wouldn't say anything. And I could see it was kind of like, oh, here we go again. Pause. Pointing out something that's ruining everyone's good time, you know, what's the great, you know, depressing. And some people just shut up and move on, or not. That's after a while it got to that point, you know. But in the early days, the people would try and debate me and have these conversations with me, and these are, like, again, people I know intimately, and the conversation would always be phrased in a way like they're concerned about me in a way, and it would never be about acknowledging the stuff I'm telling them or dealing with the information I'm telling them. It would always be, the response would always be phrased in like a, so what evidence would it take for you to change your opinion on that, Paul? Okay. You know what it's like when someone starts speaking to you like that, and you have all this information, like, you have done the work. You know, you have actually gone out there and found the information. Like, you have the historical records and the proofs. And, like, you have swum in this for, like, weeks upon weeks upon months and years, you know, of real research, not just like YouTube videos. Where you're reading the books, you're reading the manifestos, you're reading the old like letters between these people, you know, and you kind of you're soaking it all in, and you're exploring all the religious beliefs as well, and the histories behind them all, and you're looking for the symbols and the signs, and you're understanding the methods. You get into the occult knowledge and information. You start understanding how that operates. And it's like you have done the work, you know, you have got the information, you have processed the information, you know. It's kind of like, I have seen enough now to make an educated conclusion that this is the case, this is really happening. And then they say to you, with no information whatsoever, haven't even bothered to look at any of this stuff, oh Paul, I mean, what would it take for you to like change your opinion on this, because you know it seems like you're a bit obsessed about it, and I think based on what I know, you're wrong. That's basically what they're saying. It's like, Paul, you're obviously just wrong and deluded, because that doesn't line up with anything I was taught in school. So clearly you need help. So what's it going to take for me to convince you that you're delusional? Like, what information do you think you would need? Ask yourself sincerely, Paul, like, what information would it take for you to see to convince you this isn't true? And it's such just a slimy, gaslighty, programmed framing of you, isn't it? And that was rough, like, getting from these people who I thought I could trust. That's what it feels like. These people you've like lived with and drank with and partied with and grown with and laughed with, you know, and cried with. You grow in early 20s, you know what I mean? It's a rough time, isn't it? You're going through it together, you know? And here they are now looking at you like, as soon as we can cut you off, we're going to do it. And they did. They haven't got in touch with me since, you know. They're completely, I'm gone. Thank God Paul's out of it. I'm sure I'm not going to be invited to any reunions anytime soon, you know. But it's, I had a lot of these moments with people. And then they'd have these debates again where I'd explain it to them. And they just, they didn't listen. Because I'm already framed in their mind by that point as crazy. And everything I'm saying is just the ramblings of the insane. Like, that's how they viewed me that by that point. So there's kind of no going back. I couldn't make them reframe me. There's nothing I could say to them or show them that would make them go, actually, that's... Well, damn.
This podcast is supported by Trust and Will, an online estate planning service. Visit trustandwill.com for details.
If you're thinking about what you'll leave behind, Trust and Will can make sure your values live on.
For me, it's beyond money. It's about responsibility. When I pass on, I want my children and grandchildren to be provided for, of course, but I also want their spiritual futures protected. Trust and Will made it easy to make sure that any decision I had to make in sickness or in death would reflect the values that I've upheld all my life. And you know what? Trust and Will gave me the peace of mind that my legacy would be more about purpose than possessions.
Protect your legacy and your loved ones today, tomorrow, and beyond with Trust and Will. Get 20% off when you visit trustandwill.com/support. That's trustandwill.com/support to get 20% off. trustandwill.com/support.
Real, that's true, you know, because they were like, this is just stuff off of YouTube, or this is just not, this is nonsense, you know, this is not, because they themselves couldn't get past the way some of this information had been presented in some of these videos, because it was poorly presented by crazy people. So that's all I had to share with them. And they were like, I'm not even listening to that, Paul. Like, that's ridiculous. You know, and I think I realized as well, a lot of the time, it's not necessarily that they thought I was wrong. It's that they didn't want me to be right. I realized that was a lot of it as well. There was a lot of purposeful self-denial about what I was telling them. It's kind of like, well, that can't be true because that means what I'm doing is unethical. Or, well, that can't be true because my future plans involve me going into industries that involve these things you're telling me are corrupt. It's kind of... from their perspective, it's kind of like, that's not convenient, Paul. Like, that truth is very inconvenient for me, and I don't really want that to be true, so I'm just going to tell you you're crazy and just not listen to you anymore and never talk to you ever again. That's what happened, and it's kind of therapeutic getting this all out now, but I'm sure people listening, who are in this niche community online know exactly what I'm talking about. I've probably gone through the exact same experiences. And there's a lot of kind of like, no, you must satisfy my a priori conclusions and belief systems and answer the questions I've asked you through my own framing, where I've already come to a conclusion that matches my conclusion. You know what I mean? And anything I say is just like, it's pearls before swine is a good way to describe it. If I'm going to get extreme, but I'm not calling these people swine necessarily. They were just, it was a waste of time. There are some people, I learned a lot of things through doing this and burning those bridges, making those mistakes. And another one I learned is some people are just not going to listen. There's nothing you can do to convince them otherwise. I mean, there's not a damn thing you can do. You are not going to get through to them, no matter how well you present the information. They do not want to know. And that's another tip as well. They have to want to know before they start listening. And you can't make somebody want to know. You can't. Like, and either they're open and susceptible to it or they're not. And I think you can slightly inspire them to maybe start to want to know. I think that's the best you're going to get. It's kind of like a nudge in the right direction. But they have to take that conscious step to go, I need to know what's going on. They have to actually actively decide for themselves. And I think it's something said something about pride and people in general. People like to think they figured it out. People need to feel that sense of narrative in their life. Like along their journey, they discovered something that unlocks the secrets to what's really going on. And they can tell that narrative like, I figured it out all by myself because I'm so smart. So they're not willing to admit that they got help or somebody inspired them or somebody told them. It's kind of like, no, I figured it out. So I think that's the problem, which is, I think this is why people need to be able to say that, you know, make the choice themselves. I think that's the conclusion I came to, and I think I'm still ironing it out now, you know, but I think that's true. And it's a flaw of man, a refusal of help. This is why the gospel is so difficult for some people to accept, because the gospel's basic enough as it is. Jesus Christ was sent to redeem all of man from their sin through his sacrifice alone, and his sacrifice on the cross is enough. And now the free gift of salvation is available to all who accept it. But then you get Gnostic Christianity, which wants to say, no, you also have to do all this work. You've also got, and then you get a lot of Christian type cults who are, it's kind of like it's a works-based religion from there, because I think that's all rooted in I did the work to save myself. I didn't need the help. And true Christianity is like a humbling of oneself to say, I cannot do it. And that puts you in a certain mindset, and it's not a slave mindset or a weak mindset. It's actually a very strong mindset. To accept that you can't save yourself and that you need help is a maturity. It's a realization of what life actually is. It's an acceptance of one's own frail, sinful, weak nature, and the need for a redeemer is actually a powerful step. It's a relinquishing of pride, in a sense. It's a healthy way of doing it. And obviously the desire for man to maintain control and to say they did it themselves is basically the root of a lot of problems on the earth. You know, it's why we even have secret societies. It's the same thing, you know. We're going to take control of our own evolutionary choices and our own destiny and future. To hell with what Christ has already paid for us and the path that he has given us to the Father. We'll become our own gods instead, you know. And a lot of these religions, these antichrist religions, are rooted in this. No, screw you, I'm going to do it myself, basically. And that's the same thing for like the truth in general. And if Jesus Christ is the truth, the way, and the life, it makes sense that it fractally, macro to microcosmically, fits into the same narrative. People have the same attitude towards Christ, and people have the same attitude towards truth or topics. No, you can't tell me what's going on. I have to reject this, say, you know, you're crazy. And then I have to go and discover it for myself, and then I'll believe, because then I can say I found out for myself. You know, it's kind of, no, don't ruin it for me. No, I have to do the work. Don't tell me. That's kind of how that's how people are. It's just like the problem since the fall, I guess. It's just the way people are. So, again, there's a few interactions with some of my closest friends, and I know I could see the day where they gave up on me. I could see the days they gave up on me. Like, our relationships were just never quite the same after a certain point. And we never really spoke much, even though we lived in the same flat together. You know what I mean? The same apartment building. It's kind of, I could see people distancing themselves from me. And then when I came home to my home city, you know, visiting friends and family and stuff, and I would have catch-ups with them, and then I tell them what I'm into now and what I'm thinking and what I'm doing. A lot of them were like, oh, okay, and then they just move on to talk about sports ball, you know, or whatever they were into or whatever things going on, and they kind of just ignore that, and they kind of expect that from me. I've always been the weird one, so it's kind of like, that's just typical Paul off on another crazy tangent, you know, whatever. So I think they're my oldest friends who I grew up with accepted me for the crazy conspiracy theorist I am. But they're not interested in like reading my book or talking about it. But they invite me to stuff still, and then let me stick around. And you know, I'm still the friend. They're never going to leave, because it's just the bonds are strong, you know. But I have told this story where I did actually lose my best friend over this. And he's someone I grew up with as a child. He lived down the road from me, and there were always signs, but I never really saw it growing up, because I was just, I don't know, I respected him, I looked up to him, I considered him perhaps even my better in many ways, taller, stronger, smarter, all these type of things, you know. he was very much an atheistic, scientific, logistic minded type. He's a computer scientist today, and I was always the artsy, emotional, creative, quiet, keep to myself, but also go on the wild side type, you know. I've always just been that type of person. So we were kind of polar opposites in many ways, but we spent many years talking and philosophizing and getting into things, you know, and hashing out those teenage angsty years together, thinking about our problems in our life and how we deal with them and growing up, you know, the growing pains of life. So we had those moments, and I thought, you know, when I told him, when I started telling him what I've researched, what my work's about, he'd accept me for that. And he listened, but I could tell, like, he was kind of like listening to me and then doing that thing I mentioned earlier. So what would it take for you to not have this opinion? And I think he thought like I'd become some kind of like radicalized but online conspiracy theorist, and I needed sectioning, and I needed like an intervention or some help or something like this. He was living a completely different life to me at his university experience. He was full on into coding and, you know, computer science, you know.
This podcast is supported by Trust and Will, an online estate planning service. Visit trustandwill.com for details.
If you're thinking about what you'll leave behind, Trust and Will can make sure your values live on.
For me, it's beyond money. It's about responsibility. When I pass on, I want my children and grandchildren to be provided for, of course, but I also want their spiritual futures protected. Trust and Will made it easy to make sure that any decision I had to make in sickness or in death would reflect the values that I've upheld all my life. And you know what? Trust and Will gave me the peace of mind that my legacy would be more about purpose than possessions.
Protect your legacy and your loved ones today, tomorrow, and beyond with Trust and Will. Get 20% off when you visit trustandwill.com/support. That's trustandwill.com/support to get 20% off. trustandwill.com/support.
All in on the God delusion, Richard Dawkins stuff. You know, he was a science-loving, logistically minded atheist, you know. And to me, suddenly saying, yeah, well, yeah, I'm now I'm like a Christian conspiracy theorist. To him, it was like, what the hell happened? Because we were on the same page for many years, you know, and I'd had this radical change and transformation. But at this point, I was still like poor, malnourished, a drug addict. So none of that was translating very well to him, I don't think. I was not in any position, and I don't think he saw future in any of it. And he was like, this is not good for Paul. This is not going to work out well for him. I need to help him in some way. At least I think that's what he was at the time. But as the years went on, you know, these meetings got less because we lived in different cities and I never really spoke to him that often. But in my mind, it's kind of like, it doesn't matter how long it's been or how far away we are from each other, we're always going to be best friends, you know, best friends, but like the closest, because we grew up together, like we know each other, and it'll always be the same. Whenever we meet up, it's just always the same. Doesn't matter what happens, you know. It's like there's no time has passed at all. I thought we had that relationship until I invited him to my wedding and he said, no, I'm okay. Don't worry about it. We're not really friends now anyway. We never really talk to each other. It's fine. Don't worry about it. I'm not offended. It's fine, Paul. You go have a good time. And I was like, what? What? And I realized it all kind of came into focus then. Like, people had kind of told me, like, behind the scenes what he was saying about me to my friend group, you know. And he was basically saying, what the hell happened to Paul? You know, to everyone else. Like, what's going on with him? He's lost his mind, you know. And I think he made a choice. Like, I'm not associating with him. No, I'm living a better life now. I don't need people like him in my life. That type of attitude, you know. I'm affluential. I earn good money. I've got a new friend group now who share my interests, and he just doesn't align with my worldview anymore or my interests. So he's just no longer my friend. We're just not the same people, you know. And he kind of just detached himself easily. And things started to come to me then, and I started to realize, oh, maybe he was never actually a friend anyway. And I started to realize, I think I was a friend of convenience for him, because I had this shed, the party shed, you know, where he could come and drink and smoke and do these things, have these conversations, have fun. But he couldn't do that kind of stuff at his house. You know what I mean? So, because his parents were much stricter than my liberal parents, you know, so it's kind of, he had this opportunity to use me for that. And so long as I was useful for that, that's what he did, I think. And as we became adults, I had no utility. So he had no need for me anymore. So he got rid of me. And maybe he was a narcissist all along and I was just his supply. I have no idea, but he was never truly a friend. And I realized he took advantage of me for a long time in that respect. And that's just who I am. I let people into my life and do that because I'm just too nice most of the time, and that always backfires on me. Or at least I was. I'm getting a little bit more guarded these days, and it's sadly necessary, especially in this game. But again, I think I lost him because of my beliefs, and it's sad. And I want people, I guess I'm telling these stories, I want people listening to say, you know, you're not alone. If you've lost your loved ones or friends or family over this, I get it. Like, I'm there in the trenches with you. I really am. Like, I've been doing it all. I've been battling it all. You know, here's another story for you. I had another best friend who I still see, you know, occasionally, because again, time and distance and the rest of it. But I remember in the early days when I was doing the same thing to him, I was drinking and smoking with him and just talking for hours and hours and hours, like bombing him with this information, the stuff I've been looking into. And I watched him and he actually freaked out. He had like a breakdown over it. He's like, can we just stop talking about this now? I can't handle it. Like, he was scared. He was genuinely scared about the stuff I was telling him. And he had just gone through like a really rough suicidal patch, I guess is a good way to describe it. You know, he had been going through some and justifiably, like, he had really stuff going on, you know, and it was very stupid of me and selfish of me to then load all that on top of him as well about the overarching. Oh, by the way, while you're dealing with this horrible, depressing situation, how about everyone's trying to kill you and control you and everything's poison while we're at it, you know? I don't think he wanted to hear that at that time. And I learned another lesson, like, there is a time and a place. And you need to read the room. You need to be careful about when you say this stuff. You really do. Because he was not in the right place or state of mind to be hearing that kind of stuff at that point. And I shut up very quickly and I never did it again after that, you know, and that was a harsh lesson learned, because I realized what I'd just done to my friend. Like, he was in anguish and it's kind of, I was just blind. I was being selfish. I was being stupid. I was being foolish, you know? So yeah, another tip there, be careful when you say this stuff and gauge the individual you're talking to first and what state of mind are they already in prior to this, and is this the best time to be telling them? You need to know that. Be more conservative and reserved about how you share this stuff. it matters in the long run if you want to convince them, you know. Now, good news, he's okay today. He's doing very well for himself. He's fine. Okay. He's past it all. And I think maybe he might be even starting to come around to these type of things himself in many ways, you know. And the seeds were planted and I think they've grown quite well. But he's doing his own thing, you know. But yeah, be careful of that one. Pushing people too far to insanity through your ramblings. I think that is a danger. And again, all these things, all these experiences have kind of taught me ways of talking about this stuff. And I had to learn it the hard way by making the mistakes. My Tips for Truth this series is kind of dedicated to laying out all these pitfalls and these problems in the hopes that brand new people who have come to conspiracy theories watch those videos first and take on board the warnings before they go out there and make those mistakes. You know what I mean? That's the hope. Sadly, that series is very much a close the latch after the horse has bolted situation for most people watching them. They've already done it. They've already walked through the trials and lost everybody around them and burnt every bridge. It's too late for most people to watch those videos. If you're on my channel and you've got this deep, you're probably already too far gone and you've probably already made all the mistakes. But hopefully, if you think someone, if you have just taken part in waking somebody up, you know, and they're just going through the motions for the first time and started on the information deep dive, give them my presentation, my series on Tips of Truth, and say, you need to watch this as well while you're at it. Before it's too late, maybe I've created at least that to help people. I'm hoping that's going to work in some way. And look, it's not on me to help people and save the world. I'm very, very reserved with how my expectations. I've tapered them a lot. Okay, I don't know if any of this is worth it or if it's working. I really don't. People tell me it is to some capacity, but I don't really know if that's true. I don't know people's lives, you know. So I'm just doing this hoping it makes some difference in some small way. I really am. Because there's no going back once you've done this. I can't go back to just pretending this doesn't exist and this stuff isn't out there and this stuff isn't happening. It's just not possible. You can't go back. You know, that which has been seen cannot be unseen. It's a classic rule of the internet, you know, and it's people need help coping with it. I've seen crash outs, you know, I've seen people lose their minds over this information and become weird and detached and strange. And I get it. Yeah, it's scary, it's terrifying, and absolutely a justified response is insanity. And screaming and shouting is completely justified because of the horrors that are happening on a daily basis that you discover, you know. But it's not useful. It's justified, but it's not useful. In fact, it's counterproductive in many ways because it only just bolsters the stereotype that a conspiracy theorist is absolutely insane and should not be listened to because they've lost their minds, you know. It's the Pepe Silvia thing, isn't it? That is the stereotype for a reason. It's because it's true. People do start behaving like that. Again, it's not good. And it ruins us. It ruins us. And I think the whole truth of culture, and I'm not even going into that, a lot of my work is about breaking down the subcultures in the truth of culture itself, and the factions warring with each other and the controlled oppositions and how it operates and how things get infiltrated and how narratives seem to get hijacked and then steered down certain routes, you know. And I think there's a lot of channels out there who are like that on purpose. They are playing the role of the unhinged stereotypical conspiracy theorist. Like, they are playing that role to bolster the stereotype and to be the fall guy or the example when it calls for stringent measures to be taken to silence us. I do think those people are out there. I do. I really do. I'm not going to name names because I don't know, but I'm watching and I watch some channels and I wonder, it's like, are you serious? You can't be serious, right? You cannot be a real person. You know, it's sad, actually. It's really sad. Because maybe they are real as well. This is another thing. I think some people do go that far and lose their minds, but I think there are some. I have a hunch. I have a gut feeling. It's like, I don't trust you. I don't trust you at all. There's something wrong. Like, you know, it's here. It's right here. You know, you feel it in your chest and your guts. It's like essential core knowing. It's like something's off about this. Because I've seen real desperation. I've seen real mania from loved ones and family and friends. I've seen when somebody actually loses their mind. I've seen it. Okay. And I've seen some YouTube channels where I can tell somebody's really going through that. And they're struggling to cope with the information. But I've seen some who are faking it. I know they're faking it. Like, I can tell. And their job is to do that. You know, if not absolutely just say the most outrageous, ridiculous, unfounded things as well and just roll with it and double down on it and become a character of grandeur, a cartoon character. I've seen those people as well. There's definitely a lot of those out there who are just a parody of conspiracy theories too. Not a conspiracy theorist, not just a caricature, but a parody far further than a caricature, I would say, or a stereotype. Like, I feel like that's how they've controlled public opinion on conspiracy theorists, by having these people out there. And for a long time, I think in the early days, they were the loudest voices. And I think the landscape has changed now, though. I will say that. People like me are out here now trying to be more level-headed about it, you know, trying to be more grounded and reach broader audiences and bridge that gap with the unbelievers, you know, who just want to section you and try and convince them, you know, we're not crazy. We found some stuff you are not privy to, and I think you should look at it. Just look at the information and see what you think, you know. I think there are a lot of people out there doing that now, but there are also a lot of, like, podcasters, and anybody and everybody has a podcast now about conspiracy. Have you noticed that? Like, hundreds of them. Thousands even are probably podcasts about conspiracy now. It's actually becoming mainstream. It's becoming normal to talk about this stuff. And I think that's brought with it a oversaturation, which is causing apathy in the culture as well. And I think a lot of stuff that comes out is fake too. And there's a lot of talking heads out in the movement who are just spreading shock value stuff from a trust me bro perspective. Like, I'm an insider and I've seen some things, you know, but we don't actually know if any of that's true. And I think a lot of this is playing into, like, a conspiratainment world where it's conspiracy for the sake of entertainment rather than serious research now. Because when I started, it was real serious research. It was people genuinely making connections and presentations who had put their life and soul into it, who desperately wanted people to listen to them, you know, and not just because they were trying to get clicks or views, because the truth needed to get out, you know. And I think it's changed now. I think now conspiracy culture is turning into, like, a comedy club culture, or a mainstream comedy type culture in some way. But also, like, a parody of itself, a caricature of itself too. I think that's another tactic to discredit the whole thing. And I think the oversaturation of content too is not working in our favor. But again, I think that's just also an inevitability. I'm not saying this is bad. I'm saying this is also inevitable. That was going to happen as more people woke up. So it's a double-edged sword. It's good and it's bad. It's just to find the quality stuff now, you've got to dig a lot more. Really dig. And sift through the AI slop as well that's being introduced into this whole culture as well. So it's getting a little bit harder. And I think in a way this might backfire to the whole AI introduction. I think that's going to backfire. I think it's only going to make the real truther types double down on finding authentic real people actually just speaking, because people are going to get so sick of robots talking to them, basically. I do think that's going to backfire in many ways, and there'll be a recoil. YouTube has changed the game a lot. Now they've put a huge focus on shorts and short form content, and your feed now will show you a hell of a lot of shorts before it shows you a long video. Because that's what they want to push, because they're trying to compete with things like TikTok and Instagram. But I think people come to YouTube for long form content. That's what they actually want. Okay, but maybe there's more money for the company in short form. I don't know necessarily. It seems like less money for the content creator, but more money for the producer, for the platform. I think it's how shorts work. Because I think ad revenue, they'd like to limit that as much as possible and maintain as much for themselves. You know what I mean? But I think in our community, you want a long video. You don't want the short stuff. I think that's more common in the truther community. So I think for truther content and people looking for truth, I think YouTube will still work. People will find the long form and watch it. And I think there's going to be a swing back even in culture in general. I think people are going to start craving more information-packed long form videos. And it seems like this conversational style as well is getting more popular. I think people are moving past the whole graphics here and information here and, you know, and like a presentation, newscast style video, documentary style, to just more just a conversation like this. I think this is getting more popular. And I say this mainly for truth or culture. Maybe not the culture at large, but I think in our little niche, this seems to be what people want to hear and what they want to listen to now. Because I feel like the people who woke up, we've been around for a while now. There's a new edition since 2020, a new wave, who are people who kind of got slapped awake because of the whole debacle of the jibby jab, as people say, you know. But I think that definitely woke a lot of people up. And they're kind of going through the motions right now. And that's who my Tips to Truth is for. The guys, watch this. Welcome to the club. Just deal with it well and try not to burn too many bridges while you're at it, you know. But generally speaking, we've been around for a while now. And I think we've all got to the point where, like, we've learned everything. We know what's going on now. We know what's happening. And now we're just watching the news cycle and just observing the signs, trying to figure out where, how far along with their agenda have they come. You know, and we're seeing things day by day that are not surprising us. It's like, yep, I remember reading about that 10 years ago. You know, here it is. That's how it feels for us. So we've, in a way, shifted to a more of a news cycle commentary culture. We're making commentary in the news cycle more so as truth is now saying, see, told you that was going to happen. Remember this when I said this in 2012? Here it is. Here it is now. You know, another tick box for the conspiracy theorists. You know, I feel like that's happening a lot now. And again, that maybe that's a sign of apathy, because it's kind of, we're just sitting back and watching it happen. And that is a no small part and fault of the futurist doctrine of Christianity, which tells you that, oh, well, all these things must happen so Jesus can come back, you know. But if you're of the little season bent, you'll know, well, all that already happened and we're not waiting for Jesus to return.
This podcast is supported by Trust and Will, an online estate planning service. Visit trustandwill.com for details.
If you're thinking about what you'll leave behind, Trust and Will can make sure your values live on.
For me, it's beyond money. It's about responsibility. When I pass on, I want my children and grandchildren to be provided for, of course, but I also want their spiritual futures protected. Trust and Will made it easy to make sure that any decision I had to make in sickness or in death would reflect the values that I've upheld all my life. And you know what? Trust and Will gave me the peace of mind that my legacy would be more about purpose than possessions.
Protect your legacy and your loved ones today, tomorrow, and beyond with Trust and Will. Get 20% off when you visit trustandwill.com/support. That's trustandwill.com/support to get 20% off. trustandwill.com/support.
Waiting to be corralled into a giant army to go make war with Jesus in the camp of saints, more likely. And everything we see happening is not inevitable. It doesn't have to go down like this. You know, that's really the truth. And I think a little season is as long as it takes for Satan to convince the population to do such a thing. And we don't have to knowingly make the choice. We can be deceived into thinking we're attacking something else, don't get me wrong, like aliens or something, you know, but to get people in that state of mind where they're willing to go and do that, takes a lot of corruption, a lot of time, a lot of degradation, a lot of brainwashing, a lot of programming, a huge agenda, a lot of history erasing, a lot of stuff has to go on, a lot of re-educating, you know? And through that long march, that long process that they've been going through, we can push back and say, not today, Satan. No. Not today. We can be doing that. And as truth is, I think that's kind of our job, to be the ones that stand up and go, no. Sit down. And look, I know we're delaying the inevitable, but we can delay it. At the very least, I think we may be measured in judgment based on how, well, what did you do about it while it was happening? Did you at least try? Did you at least try and make the lives of those suffering any better through this process? What did you do? Or did you just sit there and observe? Were you neither hot nor cold, you know? Were you salt that had lost its flavor? And there's only one thing to do with that. Trample underfoot, it's worthless, you know? And I think that's the point. It's kind of, it's not about saving the world. It's about making the suffering, or should I say, alleviating the suffering as much as you possibly can before you leave the world. Life is a personal mission. It's not a grand mission to save everybody and everything. You have a mission. What are you going to do while you're here? How are you going to be like Christ during your time? He sacrificed himself for everybody. What sacrifices are you going to make for people who aren't you, for other people? It counts, it matters. And I think that could change the world, that can make things better, that can postpone that war we're telling you about, that can delay Satan's plans, the adversary's plans, the secret society's plans. I think we can do those things. But people need to get out of the futurist, dispensationalist mindset they've been indoctrinated into in Christendom, which is that, well, I'm just going to sit around and wait to be raptured. You know, not my problem. All those sinners can burn in hell for all I care. I'm saved. You know, it's a terrible way of viewing the world and ethos. And I think that dominates the earth right now. And most people who become Christians default into that position because that's what the seminaries and what they're taught by the pastors. And over here in our crazy little corner, we're like, absolutely not. Nope. That's not factual or based in scripture whatsoever. That is not what's going on. And unfortunately, you kind of need to be a conspiracy theorist to see why that's not the case. Just becoming a mainstream churchianity Christian is not enough to see the bigger picture, because that picture has been perfectly narrowed by the controllers who own these institutions. Sure, you might get to know Jesus and you'll get saved. That's important. That's great. But it also locks you into a weak version of Christianity where you're helpless and can do nothing and just have to sit around on your hands waiting. And that's not what we're called to do as Christians. We are called to take action. We're called to go make disciples of men. We're called to be the salt of the earth. We're called to bear good fruit, you know. And that means you have to grow. You have to get solid roots and you have to grow. And that's a process, okay? And you've got to go out there and actually do something. You've got to live, and you don't live off bread alone. You don't just sit there eating and waiting. You go out there and you experience and you sacrifice and you work for others. And I feel like that can make the world a better place, and that can hinder the enemy's plan and delay the final war. And people say, you know, oh, well, it's almost, Little Caesar's almost over. It's hopeless. It's kind of like, I don't know, man. These people have been working for at least 250 years and they still haven't got there yet. We have more time if we want to take it. That's just my own theory. That's my own opinion. You can say what you want about me based on that now, because I know many people probably have many ridiculous assumptions based on what I just said there about who I really am and what's going on, but I'm just speaking, man. I'm just thinking and speaking. You can tell that, right? That's all I'm actually doing. But today I just wanted to share some stories, get off my chest, share with you guys some of my own experiences in this truth world. If not for my own catharsis, hopefully to help you guys gain some perspective and also contextualize your own experiences a little bit. Be forgiving. Okay. Be forgiving of the people who don't know. Be patient. Be accepting if they don't accept it. And move on. Okay, and don't burn those bridges and cut those people out of your life because they don't believe what you believe. Because that's what they're doing to us, right? And that's not how we win the game. An eye for an eye. You know, we need to be different. We need to be set apart. We need to tell them the truth and forgive them when they don't care. Okay, fair enough. You know, I don't expect you to believe me. It's crazy. It sounds crazy. It's true, though. It is true. But I don't expect you to believe me. We can leave it at that. You don't have to go out there and go scorched earth every time. I think some people need to hear that. I think some people do need to hear that. Not all. Most of the truths I've met are lovely people. Lovely, salt of the earth, grounded people who work hard, have a good ethic, you know, and are polite and kind and do unto others as you do unto yourself, you know, and they're very humble, good people, most people. But there is always that 10%, 15% of a community that kind of gives the rest of it a bad image. And those are the ones that are always the poster child for our community. So I guess this is also for those people out there who are kind of have some work to do. That's a good way to describe it. Another bit of advice, I kind of made a video about this recently, is about dissociation. And I think a good method for the individual who's struggling to live in the world that's full of corruption is to treat your relationship with society like a relationship with a psychopath or a narcissist. Okay? The only thing you can do to get to free yourself from a narcissistic relationship and abuse is not only to distance yourself physically, that is useful, but you will carry the emotional trauma and programming the narcissist has put into you no matter where you go. And you'll always be having breakdowns and problems and issues of coping because you haven't actually got rid of the framework the abuser has programmed you to believe about yourself. It's not about getting away from Babylon. It's about getting Babylon out of you. And this is how people describe leaving a narcissistic relationship or a family is a good context. Like you say you were abused by a satanic narcissistic family. You were the scapegoat child who was abused at every corner and neglected and blamed for everything, you know, and you were physically and mentally abused. Well, you end up developing a belief system about who you are based on your family who programmed you to believe you are those things that you got abused for. And if you move away from your family, it's not going to change the internal problem. You're still going to have these inert belief systems that are false about yourself from them. You have a lot of programming to break down. So it's not really about leaving Babylon and like going to somewhere in the woods and making a shack for yourself. And although that's great, and there's a lot of benefits to that, you know, and if you have the capability, I'm not saying that's bad, but if you haven't done the work to mentally detach yourself and disassociate from the system as well, mentally and spiritually, the physical solution won't work. It won't work. It won't help you. You'll still have problems up here and in here. So this is why Christians are called to be, you still live in the world, but you're not of the world. But you're still in a society, whether you like it or not. So this is why it says things like render unto Caesar what is his, you know. Don't break the laws of the land, you know, conform, be kind. And it's kind of, and there's reasons for this, because that's not going to free you. Fighting the machine and revolution and bloody war is not going to change the problem. It's just more of the same problem. In fact, it perpetuates the endless cycle of violence and bloodshed and war. No, the war's not supposed to be won. It's supposed to be continued, to quote George Orwell, I think, from 1984. Like, it's supposed to go on forever. We're not called for that. Okay, so we don't need to fight the system from within violently or anything, or protest by doing protest things. We need to separate ourselves from it in a dissociated manner. We need to get it out of us. It's what it told us we are about ourselves. We need to get it out. What the schools told us who we are, you know, what the programming, the TV has told us we are, get it out of you and find who you truly are, your true self, and which is how God made you. You know, to get, and once you get that sorted, you're no longer a citizen of society, wherever that may be. You're now a subject to the kingdom of heaven. You are a member of that kingdom instead now. And you walk through the world and live in it, but you're not of it. Your kingdom is not this place, you know, and you know that. And knowing that frees you from it. And you can see through the system and you won't fall victim to the system's lies. And also a lot of the system relies on coercion and misdirection and lies. Legally speaking, they can't really break God's law, okay? Your sovereign nature. And they know this. But what they can do is make you believe you're your paper self. And if you haven't looked into that, get into that stuff. And a lot of it is based on a straw man that is not who you actually are. You are not the number, the symbols, the signs, the paper and the signatures they've made you out to be on paper. That gets blamed and fined and charged. Okay, you are actually not that entity. Legally speaking, that is a separate entity from you. But as long as you play the game of accepting faults based on identifying with that entity that is not you, they can legally then have precedence to do something about it to you physically because you have accepted it. And that's a lot of the laws of this world work that way. It's our belief in it that gives them authority over us. But who do we truly believe has authority in this world? And you have to ask yourself that. And it's not man, really. It's God. God alone. And that, again, frees you from a lot of things in a big way. Unfortunately, man is corrupt and evil, and even the early disciples were killed within society for the proclaiming the truth, the way in the life, you know. So it doesn't free you from that kind of stuff. But in here, in your very essence, your very soul, you know, you can be free and happy living in the world as corrupt as it is. Because you have no choice. You're here whether you like it or not. You can't escape Babylon. There's no place, no corner of this earth you can go to get away from it. You have to free yourself from within. You have to let it get it out of you. That's how it works. And it's true. It really is true. And this is a lot of the story of being born again. This is the Christian message. This is what it's trying to tell you. This is what it means to be filled with the Holy Spirit and to be renewed in the mind and the body, to be born again, a new creature, to burn away the old man. It's to do that what I just said there. And it turns out modern therapy has caught up to how to deal with narcissistic abuse and how to separate yourself from abusers. Well, the society is a narcissist. Society is constantly gaslighting us, and society has programmed your loved ones, your friends, your family to gaslight you when you start talking about these things. Because they don't want people questioning or going outside of the collectively agreed upon narratives. Because that makes people uncomfortable. So their job, whether they know this or not, is to get you back in line. To get you back into the herd. To make you stop being different. Stop being an anomaly. Because that looks bad on us. It makes us look like what we're doing is actually wrong. But if you suddenly fall back in line, I can then comfortably go, see, we were right all along. The herd is what's best. Conformity is what's best. It's the safest option. I made the right choice. Yeah, that's what they want. That's why when you suddenly say, no, I'm not going to do that, actually. I'm not going to go along with what everyone else is doing. They don't see that and go, oh, well, good for you. You know, that's your choice. What a great choice you've made. You go out and see how that works out. And that's not my problem. No, people don't think that way. They see you doing something that they didn't do. They see you doing the opposite of what they chose to do. Let's use home education as an example. You say to your thing, well, I'm going to home educate my child. And you're talking to somebody who sent both their kids to school. What are they going to do? They're going to look at you and go, well, I didn't home educate my kids. So what, you think you're better than me? Is that what you think? Let me tell you why you're wrong. That's what they're going to do. It's a pride problem, like I mentioned at the start. That's the go-to reaction. That's what they're going to do. And I've seen it. I've seen it to me, you know, and they see it as a personal attack on their own choices living in the world when you tell them you're going to do something that doesn't conform to what everybody else has done. Because you're choosing not to go along with that system. You're choosing to get Babylon out of you and your family, you know. You're choosing to go against the conformed traditional choices that the system has told people they were supposed to do. So a lot of the time you tell them, it's like, they don't realize they could have done that. It's like, I could have done that. That was an option. I didn't know that was an option. Now I feel stupid. Now I look dumb because I didn't realize that was an option. I didn't take that option. Now this person looks smarter than me. I need to tell them they're an idiot and they're wrong and their children aren't going to be socialized and like what they're doing is going to make their kids weird. And I need to make sure and justify that I made the right choice putting my kids in school. So I need to denigrate this person's choices and make everybody else around me go, hey, look at this guy. He wants to home educate. Isn't he weird? Yeah, he's weird. I didn't do that with my kids. What, you think you're better than me? Everyone gangs around. It's that kind of, that's how it works. That's how it works. So it's hard. So I guess in many ways, another advice I've learned is don't tell the devil what you're up to. Keep it a secret. Keep your mouth shut. None of their business. It's not his business. The devil is not omnipotent. He's not God. But he's certainly got his minions everywhere listening out and trying to find out what's going on. So if you've got plans, keep it to yourself. Quietly do it in the background, you know. And you'll get away with it. You'll get past. You'll get it. You won't get harassed. You'll be fine. You'll probably fly under the radar and everything will be okay. Within reason. There's always problems. Don't get me wrong. Living in this world is never easy, but I think it might be easier if you just keep your cards close to your chest, you know? Yeah. So I think I may have exhausted as much as I could possibly say on this. I think I've told enough stories. If it's helpful to any of you out there, let me know in the comments section. And if you have any stories you want to tell, get them out, get them in writing. It helps, you know, not necessarily my own comment section, but make your own videos or write a book or something. But it's helpful. It's therapeutic. And I think it helps people cope more. And I don't mean that in like a cope, because the modern word cope has a bit of a horrible meaning today. I mean literally like dealing with a horrible situation as it is, because it's truthful, without denying it. You know, you need to accept what happened to you and learn to deal with it productively. I've channeled it into this channel. This is my productive way of dealing with it all. I hope it helps people in some way. I don't know if that's the case. But yeah, guys, I'll leave that there. Thanks for listening. And as always, God bless.
I want you to get together.